Because they like literally took like a bottle of vodka. They had like a flaming torch that they've been tossing around. And then one guy like literally like spits out vodka and just flames go everywhere. And I thought like someone was going to catch fire.
Gather round while we relive all the twists, turns, and curves of our early adult life. We are entering a magical wonderland of ignorant bliss and carefree spontaneity. It is here that we found our place in the world, but inevitably lost it again as the earth continued to shake beneath our feet. These are your stories. Welcome to the Real 20s podcast.
Welcome, welcome, lovely people. I have no cheeky stories for you this week. Just a splendid little interview with my friend Corey. Corey and I talked about his time studying abroad in Russia, his introduction into the wine industry, which included selling Catholic Church communion wine all throughout the state of Indiana, and his big transition moving to the West Coast. All this and more we crammed into a 40-minute chat, so please enjoy.
My name is Corey Newberry. I am a wine salesman for Crew Selections. We're a small family-owned distributor located up in Windville. Basically, the last 6 months during COVID, I've basically been stick handling in the middle of the living room because I play hockey in the past on weekends. So I have like my little golf ball and my hockey stick just stick handling away, trying to plan some trips in the summer. If that does happen, I don't know if it will or not, but
yeah, because your one trip that went downhill.
Oh my goodness. My wife and I were supposed to go to Germany in May. Yeah, that's when like everything closed down. And that's when, yeah, we were like, okay, we're just going to not go. We were supposed to go to Yellowstone to bury my grandfather in September. And that got pushed out. And then we still had like a vacation. We still had that week off for that funeral. And so then we decided, oh, we're going to go to Bend, Oregon. And nope, Bend, Oregon was on fire. So that was just like last year.
Gnarly wildfires on the West Coast, which I'm sure everybody knows about. That was front page headlines. Do you have fires where you're from? Like, is that a thing?
In Indiana, no. Yeah. It's a lot more corn and soybean fields, so there's less trees.
I wasn't gonna say it.
I know where I come from, and us creatures, we know we're not the most, our scenery's not glamorous like the West Coast. So it's a different world. My father, when I was growing up, my father loved making wine at home as a hobby, and so he had us kids like help him out make wine at home. And so I grew up having fermented grape juice every fall in the middle of our living room, and my mom, you know, complaining about the smell in the house, and you know, my dad being like, you know, this is gonna save us money like in the long run with wine purchasing and whatnot. And it was just like comical, just like growing up just like being home winemakers. He also did a lot of traveling to Europe for business. So he would bring home bottles of wine. And so when I turned 18, he gave me the deal saying, I'll give you a glass of wine tonight if you stay home, because when I was 18, I started drinking. And if you have a glass of wine with me, you can't go anywhere else for the rest of the night. And I'm like, well, I live in the Midwest where I live out in rural country, and there's nothing really else to do on a Friday or Saturday night. So sure, I'll have a glass of wine with my father. And I really fell in love with wine like that.
Between 18 and 20, were there any significant points where you kind of like entered into adulthood? I know you went to school, and
it was a big transition going from high school to college for me. Like, I played Dungeons and Dragons with some friends that I never
Hell
had
yeah.
before. So I really enjoyed that. That was awesome. Going to parties and just enjoying like the social aspect of that you can go to a party and just have a blast and just not think about too many things. Playing Ultimate Frisbee in the dark.
That's great that you had that kind of freedom and you had that outlook at that time, because a lot of people, they didn't have that same experience. They talk about how much pressure they were under and they probably took themselves too seriously, and maybe they were put under a amount of stress from, you know, other elements. But that's really awesome that you just really enjoyed that time of your life. You were kind of getting to know yourself and like the possibilities of expanding your horizons.
Like, I just felt like, you know, the only way to figure out if I'm going to enjoy something or not is just, you know, try a lot of different things and just talk to a lot of different people. I enjoyed going to the feminist club that was on campus. It was called the Dorothy Day House, and it was run by these women that were like studying to become political workers that were going to work either with unions or be social workers. And so it was this house that was only women. Every weekly night they would have like a big hangout, get together, get pizza, but also just talk a lot about different issues and important aspects, and read a lot about Marxism or other like important figures in our history. And so it was really fun just to go hang out with, you know, these women and just listen to their aspect, because, you know, I came from very much like a farming rural community, and, you know, a lot of people out there, they don't really hear a lot about feminism topics or people hanging out. They're more of like, you know, I'm just a farmer, you know, loving my corn and soybean fields. And
well, it sounds like your world just kept getting bigger from like where you grew up, and then going and really like living in the city, and then moving on from there, and now you're in an extremely different environment.
Yeah.
Like a densely populated state, which holds more progressive values.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. It's a 180 difference.
Yeah,
I love the vibes, and I love the community out on the West Coast, and I just really connect with it more than I do in the Midwest now.
Well, what did you study, and what did you do directly after?
So I went to college to get a degree in European history. I did a minor in political science. My particular focus was in Soviet and Russian studies. So I did a lot of Marxist papers and learned about communism as my focus for my own self.
And you put it into practice, didn't you?
I did study abroad in Russia for 4 months. Oh.
Did it seem like a lifetime?
It had its highs, it had its lows. I, you know, really loved that trip. And if I had the option to go back again, I would do it in a heartbeat. I learned a lot about myself in that trip. And yeah, talk about like jumping off the edge of the world.
And what was that process? Was it just a program and you just selected like, hey, this is where I want to go?
We were born at the end of the Cold War. So like hearing like our parents talk about the Cold War, even our grandparents, like their perspective was so different than our millennial aspects, because we just came at it at the end. So I just got really interested by, you know, Russia and communism and, you know, what's so different and what's so unique about this. I fell in love with just learning about it, and that it was just like totally opposite from what American history is like at a lot of times. And I decided that I was going to jump off the deep end and just go for it. My college had never had anyone go to Russia. I remember like talking to the person in charge of like study abroad, and she like looked at me and she was like,
"Are you sure?"
I don't have any connections. I don't know anyone to go study abroad with.
Wow, what a trailblazer you are.
I told her, "Well, I got to do a year of language. I'm not interested in taking Spanish or French." I decided like, all right, I will find a way to get to Russia. So I signed up for this program and left to go live in Russia for 3 months. I went there without knowing any of the language, just like going blind. I mean, my father a lot of times was like, "Why do you want to do this, Corey? Like, this sounds like a terrible idea. You're going off the deep end on me." And I'm like, you know, you're like,
that's kind of the point.
Just I really want to do this. Like, I had saved a lot of money for a car, and I decided, nope, I'm just going to use all that money to pay for this study abroad program. This was in 2010, so I was I was 21 because I had my 21st birthday in April, and I had gone to Russia in August and didn't come back until like mid-December, like a week before Christmas.
So, oh, that's right, because you were somehow in Estonia. Mm-hmm. And I was there like 2 weeks after.
Yeah.
The airport there in Tallinn.
Yeah.
Is like a county airport here, but yeah, it's like an international airport.
Yeah, I went there for a day trip in Estonia because we stayed in Helsinki, Finland, and it was just funny just to like go from Russia to Finland, then Estonia and back, and Estonia just felt like, oh yeah, we're the small little community, like literally the
population. It's the Indiana of Europe.
Yeah, basically. Oh my God. Like there's, I think like the state of Washington has more people than the country of Estonia.
I believe that. 100%.
Even walking by like a church, they're like, oh yeah, there's the president's car just hanging out in the parking lot. What? And they only had like four security guards just like, yeah, you know,
no big deal,
hanging out. And you're just like going, wow.
Did you learn very much Russian while you were in Russia? Because mm-hmm. I felt like half of Estonia spoke Russian and the other yeah. half spoke Estonian.
I would not lie. Like I was shitting bricks the first month when I was living there, because I was like, I do not know any of these words. They don't even use like the Latin base alphabet. It's
wow
Slavic alphabet. Oh, so like you're like seeing, as a comedian once said, like the answer is backwards R circle circle dot E with two periods on the end, and you're like feeling like every day you're like, I do not know what everyone's saying or what the signs even say. Yeah.
What other major differences did you see in the culture that were just apparent right from the start?
For instance, for strangers, like if like in us, like in our culture, if you make eye contact with a stranger, you usually smile or make like a like, you know, some form of like gesture of like kind of greeting them or just like, you know, saying hello or, you know, positive gesture. Whereas in Russia, you look at a strange person, they look back at you and they just look like they just didn't smile. Like once they got to know you and you made friends with people, then they would see you from a mile away and they're like, oh yeah, you're awesome. Like they love to talk to you and they would like almost consider you like family. Once you like open up and they get to know you, they're just like, oh yeah, you're my brother. Like let's go drink vodka together and hang out.
Party. Yeah, what did you do for fun there?
I did a lot of crazy things.
I did a lot of fun things.
There was always alcohol at hand. Like you just buy tons of alcohol. Like don't like how we have like wine departments out here, they have vodka departments. Like it's literally a grocery aisle just full of vodka. Like
because you can make vodka out of anything. Yes. I learned this recently that essentially you can any like organic matter, you can distill yeah. vodka from it.
Oh, you can.
So they pretty much just know the secret to life.
They do. Oh my goodness. Like I think you could go from like a dollar bottle to like, you know, $100 bottles or $100 a bottle. It was like, you know, the price point ranges were just all over the chart, but you can yeah. get like some vodkas for 40 cents a bottle and you just be like, yeah, get my
like full strength.
Yeah. Like 100 proof vodka and you're just going
what down.
Yeah, it was crazy
for like less than a soda.
Yeah, like sodas were more expensive. Oh, like they had some wine over there, but I just didn't drink really wine because it wasn't like
you're like this isn't the time.
Yeah.
This isn't the time.
That'd be a different time period. But I did a lot of course partying, drinking. I went to some nightclubs. The program was really cool with like giving you like student like pass tickets, where literally you just have like a student card and you could go to into any museum for free. So I went into like the Winter Palace by myself like five times, just to, because it's like the Louvre over there, so you got to go there like so many times to see things. It's where the czars used to live. Whereas going back home into my dorm, I lived in like a Soviet complex, you know, concrete, you know, very depressing, boring architecture because it was very industrial, like Soviet architecture.
Like utilitarian.
Utilitarian.
Were there any times while you were there that you just felt like, this is it, I'm going to die here?
Oh, gosh. I always tell people when you go to Russia, the culture itself is, you feel like it's so sketchy that you're going to get robbed or murdered.
And it's because it's just like a huge shift for us.
Oh, it is.
It's just so different. That's why we feel that way, I'm sure.
It's so different. And I always told people, like, there's different levels of sketchiness. There's some levels where you're like, I can handle this and roll with this, and if things go south, I'm just going to get out of here. Whereas you just like judge it from looking at it and you're like, okay, like I'm not going to do this. I'm going to walk away from it. The time that I felt like I was going to get killed, it was the first month being in Russia. I wanted to go to a techno club. Who wants to go with me? And these two American girls were like, yeah, I'll go with you. So we decided to go. We went to this place where, like, literally it was like stepping back in time in the 90s where it was like run by the Russian mob. And so we got inside and we started dancing and the music was great. We had some shots of vodka. We're just hanging out. And then out of nowhere, they brought out women dancers that were basically strippers and started stripping. Okay. And I was just like, what the hell is going on?
You're like, this escalated very quickly.
Yeah, we just like, we're like, okay. So then they did their dance, they left, and then they brought out the male strippers.
Oh, okay.
And they were like masculine guys that were like, you know, wearing like leather man thongs and stripping to like heavy metal music. And you're just going
like, what else would it be?
Yeah. In the middle of their dances, the men would shoot fireballs out into the crowd.
No.
Yeah, they literally did. Like, they didn't like have people like say, oh, you need to back up, because they're like legitimately going to shoot fireballs into the crowd. Because they like literally took like a bottle of vodka. They had like a flaming torch that they've been tossing around. And then one guy like literally like spits out vodka and just flames go everywhere. And I thought like someone was going to catch fire. And so we just like started backing up.
You were gonna lose an eyebrow, like,
oh my god,
guaranteed.
I was really worried that at that point. But no, it gets even worse down the road. Out of nowhere, the music like cuts off. The women rush off the stage. Militia guys in black ski masks, like black outfits with like body armor, machine guns, just running in and just shutting the whole club down, like right then and there. And you're just standing around going like, what the fuck is going on? Like, is this Chechnyans or terrorists like taking over the club and we're just going to be held hostage? Like,
how was everybody else reacting? Like, I know you were probably freaking out.
Oh, us Americans, we're just like, holy shit. Like, what the hell?
I'm going to die.
And like I had everyone's passports and documents because we had to have it always on us. Yeah. So like the girls like ran to me going like, I need my passport. I need all my documents. And I'm like, all right, like, here's all our papers. Like everyone else in the club, there was a bunch of people that you could tell were doing drugs that like ran to the toilets to flush their drugs down the drain. And then other people just standing around going like, what's going on? And so then we asked someone if they spoke English and the guy's like, yeah, I speak English. And we're like, so what's going on here? Like, what's happening? He's like, I don't know. It's my first time being here. And we're just going like, well, fuck us, like we're screwed. So then we're standing around just like waiting to see what happens, because like nothing, like no guns were fired or anything, just like all these guys surrounding.
But there were guns.
Yeah, there was guns, but they were surrounding us.
Oh,
and then out of
were
nowhere,
were they shouting anything? Like, were there any like demands, or just were there?
They were just there, and wow. Everyone knew who they were, I felt like, but we just didn't know what was happening. And like, and then out of nowhere, this one guy in a full outfit, he comes out and he's got like an English like spirit dog like next to him with a gun. And that's when we realized, oh, these are the police. Like, literally they're doing a drug raid in the middle of this club. And they didn't even have, like, their outfits did not say, like, Malencia or police. Like, it was, like...
You said they were wearing masks.
Yeah, like black ski masks, like only to see their eyes. And you're just like standing there and going like, oh my God, we're gonna die tonight. Like I do not know what we're gonna do.
Oh,
so like they do their, like they shut down the whole place for like an hour and we're just standing there. They didn't ask for anyone's documents. They didn't go around like doing demands or anything. They're just like searching around, just looking for drugs with their drug dog. After a
what
while,
what kind of dog was it?
It was like, you know, one of those small,
like a Doberman.
No, it was like a small little, like almost lap dog, but like
no way. Dog.
Yeah, like an English Terrier, like
what?
Like you know, like oh, what's that Disney movie with Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah.
Like they had like the lady dog.
What?
Yeah, like this cute little, you know, dog.
Like a cocker spaniel.
Yeah. And like people were like whistling it and
give
like
your drugs.
Yeah, like making like, ooh, I love your dog moment. They didn't have like the freaking
I would have been that person that's like, can I pet your dog?
Oh, I know. Like they had this cute little dog just like looking for drugs, and then they're just like, oh yeah, we're done. So they like leave. Oh, and so then the club like starts music and everyone starts dancing, acting like nothing happened. Like it was still like in the middle of like early night. And then this
did they like bring anybody with them, like did anything
no,
did they find any drugs?
I didn't see anything, like they didn't, I don't think they caught anyone, but if the
they just wanted to ruin everyone's vibe
apparently. So like after they leave, this club announcer jumps on the stage and he starts like yelling off in Russian about things, and then decided to call it like this theme of this night by calling it the English phrase, and they said Exotic Friday, and all three of us were going like, what the hell? And then he decides that they're going to do a competition with people from the crowd, and so we learned that the announcer was asking for people like where they came from and who came from the furthest away from St. Petersburg, and us three were just like, nope, we're not going to betray one another, we're not going to do anything, we're just going to like
don't look, don't breathe.
Yeah, we're just going to act like we're from St. Petersburg.
I'm a local.
Yeah, I'm a very local.
So, that's like the only Russian phrase, you know, you're just like,
yeah,
I'm a local.
I'm a local. They got three girls and three guys. They coupled them off. They didn't know each other at all. They were all complete strangers to one another. And this guy starts handing them each a banana.
Uh-oh.
And
nothing good like, ever happens in a crowd nothing. With a banana.
Oh no. Like we were just going like, oh my God, like what is going to happen with this banana?
What is it?
The competition was the guys would hold the banana. They can't do anything with the banana other than hold it down by their junk. And
it's one of those scenarios, you're just trying to figure out what the hell is happening.
I know. I was just like blown away, like something like this would happen. Yeah.
I just came for the techno.
Oh my gosh. They then brought out, they got all the bartenders to come up, and they're like, you know, their challenge is to make the craziest cocktail like styles ever, but like throwing bottles in the air and catching it, and it's like, you know, like doing like the fancy, you know,
the bartender. Coyote Ugly style.
Yeah, like that. And just watching these bartenders just like throwing like bottles of vodka, some of them like falling to the ground and like busting the bottle and glass shattering everywhere.
It's fine, it was only 40 cents.
Yeah, it was only 40 cents vodka. After they did that whole thing, we wanted to keep dancing, but like they kept doing all these different like activities, and we're just like, okay, it's like 2 a.m. we're like,
this was essentially like a bachelorette party.
It was
maybe Exotic Friday really just means bachelorette night.
I don't know, I felt like they did that kind of thing every night or every Friday.
You don't even have to write this down because it just burns so far into your memory.
Yeah, I will never forget about it. And I've told many people even afterwards like about their story, and they're just going like, oh my God, like.
And the local there's just like, yeah, what, it was just a Friday night. Like, do they drink coffee there?
No, they drink black tea. Okay. They're tea drinkers. It's really hard to find coffee out there. They have like what do you call it, like it's called a Solvazar, It's basically like, if I had to give like a phrase for what this device would look like, it's like a mini keg where you just serve tea all day, where you have like a little like gas, like you just like turn on your gas and then you lit a little fire underneath there, and then it keeps your tea warm in this big metal container, and then has a spit where you just like put your glass under there and you just pour your tea out and then just turn it off, and then you just sip your tea and you just have that in the middle, like in the corner of your house or apartment, and you just go over there, get tea and just drink just and
on demand. That's actually really genius.
Yeah, I was like, man, I really want one of these, but I can't all the way back to America.
You just gotta build your own.
Yeah, just build my own. But yeah, they drink black tea, like hardcore black, like earthy tea.
Interesting. Yeah. So what was it like to transition back to the States when you got back? Because you weren't done with school, right? You like went back to school afterwards.
Yeah, I had our program gave us like a couple days of traveling back, where we stopped in London for a couple days and got to, you know, socialize with each other. And I think it was almost kind of nice just to be like, when you cross over back into Western Europe, you're kind of getting close to being back to normal, where you're able to figure things out easier. And like the biggest thing that I always was afraid about living in Russia is you had to have documents on you all times. Like you had to have your passport, your immigration card, you had to have like your student visa. You had to have all these documents on you, and like the Russian police can come up to you and ask you like at any time, like, I want to see your documents, like show up to me. And you're like, what crime did I commit? And they're just like, just show me your documents. And you're just like, okay, here's all my documents. And if you're like missing one document, you go to jail and you sit there until they can figure out who you are and why you're there. And like,
so you had experience that a lot of people, yeah, that immigrants here deal with on a regular basis with,
I know,
ICE.
So that's like how, like I really feel for people that are immigrants in our country that have to worry about that constantly. And I had to live that in Russia every single day. And that was like the one thing when I came back to the States, I would catch myself like checking my pockets and my coat, being like, do I got all my documents? Oh wait, I only need my wallet. Like I only need a driver's license. Like, or I could just go out without a driver's license and just walk around and not worry about the police showing up randomly.
Did you find any foods there that you just haven't been able to replace that you just had there and you loved?
Crepes. But they would have like crepe stands everywhere, and they call them blini stands. And you just go in and you can order like it was like a fast food restaurant setting where you go in, you get your crepe, where you can get like ham and cheese wrapped in with a crepe, and one with like caviar and cheese or creme fraiche, and just eat caviar and a blini.
They eat a lot of caviar there?
They do eat caviar like crazy.
What?
They love, like,
no way.
They love pickled meat and fish. Some things they eat over there I did not like at all, and other things were like, oh man, this is delicious. But
how did this experience impact you through the rest of your 20s?
It made me more confident in myself, of feeling like I can go anywhere and do something new and crazy and different and feel like I didn't need to be in this shelter of hiding from someone or being afraid of being judged. Because I think a lot of us in our 20s were always afraid of being judged and being like looked at from an outsider's perspective, because I think that was always the biggest fear, was like, you know, what do people think about me? And then going to Russia, I'm like, you know, screw it, I'm just gonna do whatever I want, I'm gonna explore, I'm just gonna throw myself off over the edge and try a lot of different things and explore and learn a lot. And I think that trip really helped me to open up a lot more. And even my friends like said, like, yeah, when you came back from Russia, you're a lot more open and talkative and willing to go to crazy clubs and crazy places in Indianapolis, going to dubstep like bars in the middle of the night and just being like, you know, free will and just not worry about anything.
Ooh, dubstep was big back then.
Yeah, it was.
Like for like a few years. Oh my God. Was like the shit.
It was this thing. Yeah. The only one I really enjoyed the best was like it was Star Wars themed dubstep. And that was like what the DJ's like theme was. And
That's awesome.
And that was the night that someone asked me if I wanted to do shrooms with them. And I said no, because I was on ecstasy at the time. So I was like, nah, I'm good, man.
Not a good combo.
Yeah, I'm just gonna enjoy just dancing out here.
Ecstasy and Star Wars dubstep. Oh my God, what a combo.
Yeah. I had a blast that night. It was a trip for sure. So yeah, I feel like I really just learned to be more open and just not be afraid of people and just, you know, be chilled and laid back and just, you know, enjoy the moments and, you know, live in the moment versus being afraid of what's going to be happening in the future. Because I think that's what a lot of us in our 20s were always constantly being reminded of, is worrying about what am I going to do after college? What job am I going to have? Like, am I going to get married? Am I going to have kids right now? Like, that was always what my parents were always like asking me, like, what am I going to do? And I'm just like, you know, it'll happen when it happens. After college, I had a history degree and I thought I was going to go in the museum industry business. Of course, that was when the Great Recession happened. And I was just realizing there wasn't a lot of job opportunities in the market and everything was getting cut. So I was like trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? I got a job offer working for a small family-owned winery in Indianapolis, where we primarily sold a lot different styles of wines than what we sell out here. So they mostly do like Concord, American varietal based, like sweet dessert style wines. I mean, I was in charge of selling the communion wines for Catholic churches. To sell church wine for Catholic church, the owners have to be good practicing Catholics. They have to have a bishop come to inspect the facilities and bless the place. The other important thing is for it to be church wine is you don't pay liquor taxes on it because it's for religious purposes. So it was like super weird and interesting just to see that.
You're probably one of the few people that really like has that experience.
I did that for 2 years working at that winery. And then I decided that I really fell in love with the wine industry, of just how you get to meet a lot of interesting people. After working there for 2 years, I was looking for wine jobs out on the West Coast. I was offered a assistant wine buyer job in Bellevue. I moved from Indiana to Bellevue and lived and worked at that Whole Foods store for 2 years, and then I got promoted to opening the Whole Foods in Tacoma as the head wine and beer buyer. And I worked at that store for almost 2 years, and then got hired with True Selections, where I'm at now as a wine salesman.
So how did you meet your wife?
I met her online through OkCupid.
How old were you?
I've known her for 5 years, and I was in a very serious relationship with someone when I was living in Indiana. And when I got this job to move to the West Coast, I thought she was going to move with me and we were going to get married. And I almost proposed to her. And then it came to the point that we came to a dead end in our relationship. And that was like a really hard breakup for me. Like, I had a couple years of just taking care of myself and just, you know, and then like just living out here, it was just tough for the first couple years because I didn't know anyone. I was, you know, starting fresh, like meeting new people, making new friends. And the only people I had were people I knew from work. So it was just tough meeting people outside of work. And so I decided, okay, I'll try online dating because it seems like it's near impossible after college to have a big social life. So I went on a couple dates, and that's when I met my wife. And she said my pickup line was the best because I read her profile. Because that's the thing, most guys, they just are like, hey,
they're like, photo, okay, cool, let's meet.
Yeah. Yeah. And just randomly, Who's your favorite Jay Austen character from Pride and Prejudice? And just left it like that. Just and it just
and
like,
then you drop the mic.
Yeah, just drop the mic and walk away. And it just like grabbed her attention. She's like, oh, you actually read my profile.
Aww. What was her favorite character? Ooh, see, that's part B of the question. Now you have to remember what it was.
Gosh. I think she didn't like, I mean, she liked Elizabeth, not the main girl character, but she liked the older sister because she vibed more well with her. And then she asked which character I more connect to. And I'm like, well, I'm not Darcy because I'm not a dick and, you know.
I'm not a dick. First. Good way to start the day. I'm not a dick.
Yeah. So I said, I'm more like Bingley. Like, I'm a happy, joyful, you know, go-getter guy and just, you know, living in the moment and just, you know, being a romantic, like, hopeless romantic person. And
that she was found like, that answer acceptable.
Yeah, she did.
She's like, all right, fine, you can stay. From the time you got back to the States after Russia to your 30th birthday, like peak and valley, what was the peak and what was the valley? What was the greatest feeling or experience you had, and what was the most challenging time?
I really felt like my trip to Russia was probably the highest peak of my 20s. I think it was just like exploring a whole different country and place that I didn't know the language. I didn't know a single person going there. I had no family members ever going to Russia too, and everyone questioning me and like saying, are you really sure you're going to be happy doing this? And it's like, yes, I am confident, and just like building that confidence and that drive of saying, yes, I am going to do this. I am going to throw myself over the edge and do this. And I think that even includes when I decided to move out from Indiana to Washington. It just was like, yeah, I'm going to pack what I could fit in my Ford Focus and just drive, you know, 2,000 miles to get over to the West Coast and just live there. And I'd say the most challenging period of my life was probably the first 2 years living out in Washington State of just, you're on your own, Corey. Like you gotta figure it out on your own. You don't have anyone around you, and the nearest person that you know is back home and 2,000 miles away. And yeah, it was just like, I think that didn't really hit me until I had broken up with my serious girlfriend back in Indiana, and it was Christmas. Man, that was a really depressing year just to be out here. But at the same time too, like, I really take it for granted for that it was an important special year for me, that I had to reflect all the things I had done, all the accomplishments I did. I challenged myself to being like, okay, you're gonna do all this by yourself, you're gonna explore, you're gonna enjoy, you know, Washington. And I went on a lot of hikes and a lot of places by myself. Like, I just sometimes I'd just be like, I'm just going to take a bus and it's going to take me downtown Seattle, and I'm just going to get off at a random exit and just explore and find my way home somehow. That was one of the most challenging periods of my life, of just being like, you have to do this by yourself and you have to really, you know, conquer your fears and, you know, your dark thoughts and depression, and really conquer it and try to move by it. And it, I think it really helped me out overall, feeling more confident at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. That's a period of time that a lot of people skip over, especially going between like exiting a relationship when you have like a companion and then you're on your own. And especially if you're in a scenario where you're away from your family, I could see why that would be a really important period of time where you do a lot of reflection and self-discovery. And I think so many people are afraid of that and mm-hmm. afraid of themselves and yeah. afraid of what they will uncover. But yeah. everybody that I know that has done that, especially for like a couple years and really taken that time intentionally, has come out the other side, and like it's done so much for their character and their confidence. I think a lot of more people should be willing and open to do that. Well, I'm glad you are getting through this pandemic and that it hasn't impacted you too greatly. And I hope you get to play hockey soon.
I hope so too. I've been missing it too much.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining me and telling your story, and I'll see you very soon.
Yeah, I'll see you very soon too.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
A big thanks again to Mr. Corey Newberry. You can say hello to him on Facebook or Instagram. I will linkety-link those below in the show notes. He is literally bursting at the seams with wild stories, so I'm sure he has more to share. There are many more big things on the way for this humble podcast, and I will give you more details about how you can support the show. More on that next week. That is a wrap for now. Mwah. Love you all. That's my Fran Drescher kiss. Mwah. Mwah. Get used to that one. I will catch you all on the next episode.